Hello, I'm Professor Bob Hewish from the Department of International Development Studies at Dalhousie University. You're listening to GDP, the Global Development Primer, the podcast dedicated to all issues in international development studies. Follow me on Twitter at Professor Hewish. Thanks again for joining us on GDP, the Global Development Primer podcast. For this episode, we're very delighted to have the director of the Human Development Report Office from the UNDP, Pedro Conceição, join us today for this episode. Now, since January 2019, Pedro has been director of the Human Development Report Office and lead author of the Human Development Report. Now, prior to this, Pedro served as director of strategic policy at the Bureau for Policy and Program Support and chief economist and head of strategic advisory unit at the Regional Bureau for Africa. Now, before that, he was director of the Office of the Development Studies from March 2007 to November 2009 and deputy director of ODS from October 2001 to February 2007. Now, his work on financing for public development and on global public goods was published by Oxford University Press in books he co-edited, and he's published on inequality, the economics of innovation, technology, and change and development, and amongst other journals, he's been featured in the African Development Review, Review of Development Economics, Eastern Economic Journal, and others. And today, we are very happy to have Pedro Conceição join us for talking about the Human Development Report for 2023-2024. Pedro, welcome to GDP.
Thanks, Bob. Happy to be here.
It's fantastic to have you join us for this particular season, where a lot of our guests have talked about the future of development, the forecasting of development, and the report that you've put forward here is quite telling, especially when we see that the Human Development Index is projected to reach a record high in 2023 after steep declines in 2020, 2021. But what does the picture look like in terms of inequalities, especially between rich and poor nations?
Well, let me pick up on this point about reaching the record high, Bob, because in a sense, it's something we should celebrate. And also the fact that the trend reversed. So now we moved away from a decline in the Human Development Index at the global level to a trend of improvement, which was basically the trend that we had seen from 1990 up to 2019. But there are two aspects that are concerning. One has to do with inequalities, and I'll come to that. But there's also the fact that this recovery in the Human Development Index is happening on a lower trend than the one that we had before. So the trend of improvement in the Human Development Index has sort of shifted downwards. And if we fail to close the gap with the trend that was prevailing before 2019, this implies a huge loss of potential that can last for a long time and potentially become permanent. But the other aspect that is concerning in this story of recovery is the fact that the poorest and most vulnerable of our international community are being left behind. So inequalities between countries at the very top of the Human Development Index ranking and those at the very bottom have been growing, increasing over the last 4 years. And this represents a break with a trend that of convergence of narrowing this gap that we had seen for the decades preceding the decline in the Human Development Index at the global level in 2019.
So, I mean, there's been some major events that have gone on in the world in 2020 and 2021 when we see this decline take place. But you know what I'm hearing here is that beyond, you know, wars or conflicts breaking out that have impacted this or other issues that might come part of it, is that ability to leave the poorest, the globally poor behind, just seems to be ever increasing without much means of recourse.
Exactly. And what's striking about this reversal in this trend, by the way, the World Bank a couple of weeks ago published a report that had similar findings using different data. And the title of their report was The Great Reversal, again, documenting this moving away from a process of convergence. That's what development is all about, isn't it? It's about ensuring that all countries move together towards higher standards of living, higher standards of human development. So the fact that the countries at the top are pulling ahead and those at the bottom are falling behind is concerning. And it's not about something that these countries are necessarily doing badly or not well. According to our report and our interpretation, it relates very much to the fact that we are not managing internationally the interlinkages, the interdependencies that are still prevalent, and that was put in sharp relief in 2020 and 2021 with a number of events such as conflicts, as you mentioned, but also the way in which we responded to the COVID-19 pandemic and the way in which we came out of the COVID-19 pandemic.
So that's very interesting. So these interdependencies, these interlinkages, what is it about them that's making this development gap grow?
It's the fact that those that have the capabilities internally, the financial resources, the fiscal space, to pull themselves out of these problems have been able to do so. But in the process, we forgot the implications that those actions might have in the countries at the very bottom of the Human Development Index. So our argument is that when we fail to manage these interdependencies, the poorest of the international community, and actually this is something we see also within countries, by the way, many parts of many regions within countries, even countries that have high levels of the Human Development Index, are also being left behind. So I think it's important to recognize the need to manage these interdependencies in a way that doesn't leave those that have the least ability to cope with these challenges behind.
Right. So, you know, this is really telling because today, and you know, in 2024, we're seeing the parts of the world that are, you know, on the brink of famine or experiencing most of the early warning indicators for famine. I mean, conflict in Gaza right now is testimony to that. But what I'm hearing here is that beyond these extreme circumstances that are often products of conflict, that there's something within the way we've structured our global economy in the last couple of years that's going to make this widening gap, leaving poor countries behind, more common. I guess my question is, why are we falling short to try to heal these divisions? What was sort of the reversal in attitude to allow that gap to grow?
The interpretation we provide in our report has to do with patterns of polarization, of division that exist both across countries, and a lot of our discussion thus far has been on these differences between countries, but also, as I alluded to, on what's happening within countries. So political polarization poisons collective action, the collective action that is needed to address shared challenges, both within borders and across borders. And the result of this political polarization is the gridlock. The title of the report is Breaking the Gridlock. So the way to get out of this situation where we have this divergence and this reversal, in our view, is by finding ways of breaking this gridlock of polarization that is impeding our ability to address shared challenges both within countries and across countries.
So that polarization is something that I'm pretty sure everybody can find a way to relate to. It just be relatively cognizant during any election season in any country, and we're seeing that much more. The role of disinformation, the role of really trying to invest people into irrational projections of what the world is about rather than the rational. And is that Is that something that we could consider to be like a democracy deficit or democracy paradox in a way?
Definitely. And we actually find evidence that even though people around the world support democracy, 90% of the global population is supportive of the ideal of democracy, would like to live in a democratic political system. And this has is a percentage that has been very stable over the years. The share of the population that at the same time supports leaders that may undermine democratic processes has been increasing since the turn of the century. And in fact, we have now surpassed the 50% mark. So a majority of the global population today, even though supports the ideal of democracy, would also support leaders that may undermine these democratic processes. So this is the democratic paradox, as we call it in our report. And it's a way of giving expression to this polarization, where people do not feel represented in their political system. In fact, 2/3 of the global population today does not feel that the political system is listening to their voices, listening to their aspirations. Half of the global population does not feel in control of their lives. And in the report, we link much of these trends and patterns to perceptions and the reality, in many cases, of insecurity. We find that people that feel insecure tend to trust others less, tend to be attracted to the extremes of the political spectrum, secondly, so it feeds polarization, and have a higher sense of lack of control of their lives. So the more insecure people feel, the less in control of their lives they feel. So going back to understanding the drivers of insecurity, in our view, is crucial to his polarization.
And it's really interesting how you frame that, because when you roll back the clock in the last 5-6 years, including the time of the pandemic, you know, the leaders around the world who were, undermining democracy in their own ways, or the ones that were demonstrating autocratic tendencies, really tended to kind of avoid deep investment in facts and truth. And there was always a little bit of manipulation there. And I think we're seeing that so much more, is that there's a willingness for people to either invest in those sort of political leaders who kind of just don't care about the truth, or they're able to spin it in a vision of what they believe should be the future for their own nation, that really avoids a lot of human needs and sort of gets couched into these sound bites that sound somewhere between passionate and angry or wanting these big changes, but really don't have a sense of how real people are living.
Exactly, Bob. And what you describe is what we can consider sort of the supply side of the discourse, and also the contextual element, the context of misinformation that enables some of these messages to gain traction. But really what the report is looking at is at the demand side. So the question that we need to ask ourselves is, why are some of these messages gaining traction? And of course the two interact with one another. So there's a vicious cycle here, where the sense of insecurity is being addressed by, on the supply side, by the discourses that you characterize, that give people, in effect, a false sense of security. These discourses also often tend to be inward-looking, and in that sense, they are also a barrier to the international cooperation that we need to address so many of the shared challenges that we confront. So then we come back to the beginning of the importance of recognizing the interdependencies that we have in our world and the need to manage them together as an international community.
And this, I take it, you know, combines together to see that decline of the Human Development Index, where, you know, the pieces coming together is on the demand side, like you say, and a growing percentage of humanity that is insecure, another growing percentage of humanity, maybe part of that first part, who are disenfranchised or sort of giving up on the way that traditional government or business has been run. And then maybe there's other factors in there too, like the, you know, we're living in an age of climate changes, and there's a lot of messaging that just sort of feeds into that fear, and all taken together is moving us into this deep place of rationality. And where in this, where does the report touch on kind of steps that we can take to bring the rational back, to bring the facts into the equation, or policy steps that we can do to kind of flush this culture out a little bit?
It does, Bob. Our conversation may seem that the outlook is very, very grim, but the report actually suggests ways in which we can ease polarization. So one, within countries, is by recognizing that often people agree on more than they think they do. So you mentioned climate change, that is becoming also one of the polarizing issues. So some groups believe that we are doing too little, others believe that we're doing too much, and it's becoming sort of one of these cleavages in many societies. But actually what data tells us is that as much as 70% or close to 70% of the global population would be willing to make a financial sacrifice to mitigate climate change. And yet when you ask the same people what they think people around them believe, if they share this same belief, then the percentage drops to a little over 40%.
That's really interesting. That's very interesting, because you can see right there with that example that the big issue is agreed upon, but maybe the method of getting there is where the disagreement comes out a little bit. Maybe they think that the other group wants to do it this way or that way, or and maybe it's those divisions that get widened.
That's part of it, but it's also even more fundamental. It's recognizing, if we find ways of enabling people to recognize that we actually agree. So there's like a fog when it comes to what people think others think. It sounds strange, but it's very important, because to address these shared challenges, no matter how individually committed people are to addressing them, that might not be enough. In fact, that is not enough. We need collective action. So it matters also if we believe that those around us are equally committed to address the issue. So just piercing through this fog of what we call misperceptions by enabling people to recognize that they agree on more than they think would be a way of easing polarization.
You know, I really like this language, this term that you put to it, the fog of misrepresentation, because it's, you know, it requires skills to get through it. It requires people to come to discussions ready to listen to kind of, I wouldn't say polarizing, but maybe kind of a plurality of political agendas and try to see where that commonality lies. As a quick example, one of my own areas of research I've worked on is looking at healthcare access. And when you ask people, you know, would you like healthcare? Usually the answer is absolutely. Then it gets into, well, social or private, and then they get into the weeds about, you know, wait times or the brands of medicine. But then if you follow up with another question, are you prepared to go bankrupt? Your family go bankrupt because of medical costs? Well, no. And so now you're back up at that big level again. I would like healthcare and I don't want to go bankrupt. Okay, right. Go. How do we do that? And it gets away from a lot of these binaries that I think are locked into that fog that you mentioned.
Absolutely. And the report also looks into ways of enabling people to find that commonality and piercing through these misperceptions. And one of the ways in which this can work is by convening groups of people, sometimes called citizen assemblies or sometimes also called mini-publics, in which the objective is not to have people agree or change their views necessarily, but simply recognizing what they agree on. And I think your example on healthcare is another illustration that often people agree on much more than they think.
Yeah. And I think that's fantastic. I mean, Pedro, I hope that those practitioners and students and professors and the journalists who listen to this show are going to be willing to dig into the report and to basically ask the questions and think about the ways that the Human Development Report is suggesting to cut through that fog, because that's really the key to it. There's enough going on right now where we're seeing that these social divisions are to the point where they're retracting the quality of lives. So how much more time, I guess, should we spend in this fog before we start getting it right?
Absolutely agree, Bob. Wouldn't have said it better.
Well, you are the lead author on the Human Development Report, so I'm hoping there's a lot of stuff in there that is very well said and that can be tremendously important for these discussions going forward, because it's, I think what the report does very well is show, in terms of the data, the number, the research that you've got behind it, the seriousness of the case. And that, like you say, shouldn't be a discouraging fact. This should be kind of the clarion call to get serious about changing these dialogues.
Absolutely.
Well, Pedro, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on GDP. It's been a pleasure. The Human Development Report for 2023-2024 is out, and we're hoping that many people will take the time to read it. Thank you so much indeed for joining us today.
My pleasure, Bob. Thank you. And thank you to your listeners as well.